You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hi, unbiased scientists. I am super excited to debut the new intro song for Unbiased Science. And this was an original piece created by the one and only Ben Siegel. Ben has been with the pod for years now and has helped edit our episodes. And I'm just super grateful for his ear and his talent and his patience with me. So thank you, Ben. And just a note about the ultimate song that we decided to go with. We went back and forth. We had a bunch of different ideas, but really we landed on something that felt fresh and exciting and positive and sort of triggers like inquisitiveness. And it's almost an homage to the science fiction, you know, like the bum bum. Okay, that's a terrible example. You know, like the Star Trek, the Star Wars, like all those classic sci-fi movies that my Trekkie husband has gotten me interested in. So that was a nod to my husband, Ethan. So shout out to you, E. I also really want to just give a shout out to my team behind the scenes. The team has changed and grown over time. I can't wait to introduce you to them in the coming weeks and months. And in particular, I really want to give a shout out to Jared Brightup, who is, I guess, technically my executive producer, but really he's a close friend, a confidant, a jack of all trades, who's just been willing to raise a hand and help out in any way possible. So Jared, thanks so much for everything. I wanted to also acknowledge that the pod is going through some changes in tone and structure, which you may have noticed. I've been very upfront and open. I've never hidden the fact that I'm not a biomedical scientist, nor would I ever pretend to be one. I'm a public health scientist, and there are things that are definitely outside my scope of expertise. And when I want to tackle topics that are outside of that area of expertise, I'm going to bring on experts who do have that expertise. And I really, really feel strongly that that kind of interdisciplinary collaboration is critical for effective science communication, but also for communication in general. So there's definitely going to be more of that. And I'm excited about that because you can't know everything, right? And then the other thing that I really want to call out here is something that's very important to me. And I'm not going to lie, I had a whole thing written and like scripted here because I wanted to make sure I hit on all the key points, but I scrapped it and I'm just going to speak from the heart here. I want everyone to feel welcomed by unbiased science. I want people who are the skeptics, who distrust the science and medical establishments, people who don't have formal scientific training or education, people of all different walks of life and backgrounds and cultures and experiences and political ideologies and philosophical stances and all the things, you're all welcome here. I don't want anyone to feel like judged in any way. That's extremely important to me, and I'm going to explain why in just one moment. But really, my biggest fear is having unbiased science become an echo chamber. And just really grateful when I see people able to have discourse and conversations on the unbiased science page without getting hostile. Like we all just have to take a step back and realize that we're all bringing different things to the table. We're seeing the world through different eyes, right? But we have to figure out a way to stop being so polarizing in everything that we say and do and consume on the internet. And so my hope is that unbiased science is a common ground for people who have those different perspectives. Now, the personal anecdote that I wanted to share here is about my dad. My dad died in December 2019, and he was and continues to be the smartest person that I've ever met in my life. If you ever met my dad, he was such a character. We joke that he was like a Jewish Tony Soprano, like a streety guy, no formal education. We joked because he would get kicked out of every school for bad behavior. He kind of wore that as a badge of honor. And we're not 100% sure that he actually received his high school diploma. I'm not positive. Despite that, I swear that he was the smartest man I've ever met. I had so much respect for his work ethic. He brought himself up. He was self-taught and self-driven. He became an extremely successful businessman. Unfortunately, he was also a gambler, and that turned out to be his undoing in life. And that's a conversation for another time. Klaus, my dog is here making noise. I'm sorry. Sorry for that background noise. But yeah, I was thinking about my dad because I remember when he got his emphysema diagnosis. I remember the look in his face and in his eyes. He was so terrified because he didn't speak science. He didn't understand what the doctors were telling him and what this meant for his new reality after getting the diagnosis. I remember that fear. And more than that, I remember seeing the shame and the embarrassment when he realized that it was his smoking, you know, 3-4 packs a day of cigarettes for I don't know how many decades that undoubtedly contributed to his COPD. He was so embarrassed. And, you know, I was mad, right? I wanted to see my dad, the strongest, most amazing man I'd ever known. I wanted him to live forever. But I remember telling him that, you know, you can't blame yourself because think about where you came from and the culture and the world when you were growing up. People didn't fully understand the harms of smoking the way that we do today. And in fact, you had doctors advertising Philip Morris. You know, doctors recommend Philip Morris. That was a real ad that was printed in magazines. And it's not surprising that he, you know, fell victim to that and then got hooked on the nicotine and developed a habit. So I wanted to take the judgment out of that. And I also remember that my first instinct with my dad, the way that I coped with his diagnosis, was I poured myself into science textbooks and I wanted to learn all of the technical things that were going on. And I remember trying to convey these things to my dad and just like the look on his face, like I was talking about the physiology of his lungs, like it just didn't resonate. That's not how he communicated. And when I reframed things for him, and when I started from a place of meeting him where he was and understanding the things that mattered most to him and how to communicate to him, it just shifted everything for me. And I just want to say that my dad continues to be my inspiration. Of course, he's on my mind always, but especially when it comes to creating content. I'm talking infographics, but also podcast episodes for Unbiased Science. And I want this to be a place where everyone can come and enjoy themselves for the, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes, however long these episodes are, and feel like you're not being judged or criticized just because you have a different perspective or a way of seeing the world. But maybe, just maybe, you'll walk away learning something. Maybe you'll have some of your preconceived notions challenged. So that's all that I ask. And I want to sincerely thank each and every one of you for your support over the years and for being here. So thank you. Welcome to Unbiased Science, where we bring scientific method to the madness. I'm your host and public health scientist, Dr. Jess Steyer. And today I'm fangirling a little bit right now, I'm not going to lie. We're going to be talking about media literacy and communication with someone who knows this topic very well. And I'm going to work on this pronunciation, Moshe Wanunu. Welcome to the podcast.
Perfect.
Yes.
100%.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like I know, and actually, is it okay if I call you Moshe for the purpose of this?
Moshe works.
Moshe. Okay. I feel like I know Moshe. I feel like I FaceTime with Moshe on a daily basis because I am constantly following him on Mo News, looking at my Instagram feed and seeing his face. So I feel like you're a good friend of mine already, Moshe. So I did a little sleuthing on the interwebs. I'm going to give just a very brief bio background. I'm sure it doesn't do justice at all to all the work that you've done, but just let me know if I'm missing anything important to highlight. But Moshe is an award-winning journalist, Emmy, Murrow, and Webby Award winner with extensive experience in news production at CBS, Fox News, Bloomberg, and more. He's an executive producer, most notably the youngest ever executive producer for the CBS Evening News. He is the founder of Mo News, which I'm obsessed with, and we'll talk about that. It's a news platform focused on accessible, reliable information. It's nonpartisan, which we'll talk about, and Mo Digital, which is a media consulting firm. And my understanding, Moshe, is that your focus is really on restoring trust in news, that traditional news has really alienated audience. It's been very polarizing. And so, you know, you really have a very fact-based and, again, nonpartisan, fair approach to delivering the news. So just thank you for everything that you've done. I'm so excited to chat with you.
I'm excited to be here and appreciate that intro.
So the first thing, and we were just chatting briefly before we hit record, I was saying that I find it very challenging to remain unbiased. And obviously that's my name, Unbiased Science, but I do my best to present information in a balanced way. But obviously that could be challenging because I'm a human being. I have my own set of experiences that have shaped the way that I view the world. So can you talk about that a little bit? How do you remain unbiased? And do you prefer, I know you mentioned you prefer, you know, other terms other than unbiased. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, with all due respect to the name of this podcast, so it's funny because so many people will come to me and they're like, Moshe, I just appreciate how unbiased you are in the way you cover news. And my reply to that is, well, let's be honest here. We all have biases. I am biased, right? I am a 41-year-old male who lives in Brooklyn, New York, married with a young child, originally from the Chicago area, went to college in DC at GW. I have experiences that have shaped my perspective in life. I grew up in America. I bring an American perspective, right? But I've traveled extensively. At the same time, I'm going to have a unique perspective, a biased perspective, versus somebody from Brazil, someone from Japan, someone who grew up in a rural area. We all bring our biases. What I try to do, despite that bias, to help overcome that bias, is to try to always level set myself on any story. Like, okay, what are reliable sources from a variety of perspectives saying on this story? And so what I seek to do on Mo News, which began on Instagram, and now we have a daily podcast and an interview podcast and a daily newsletter, is bring multiple fair perspectives. Like, am I doing the story justice? You know, like an interesting example in the last week, actually, what I found fascinating is I learned about trophy hunting and the fight between the German government and Botswana. And it turns out the Germans want to end trophy hunting because of animal rights activists. In Botswana, where the elephants are located, they're like, no, we're good with trophy hunting. There's too many elephants in our country. And so what was very interesting there, that's an interesting example of, again, not necessarily unbiased, but more, can I bring you multiple perspectives? Mm-hmm. Can I tell you why the Germans are where they are, why the Botswanans are where they are when it comes to elephants in their country? And do it justice based on what reliable people are saying.
Right.
And so that's a bit of what we try to do. Again, that's just one example. It gets much more complicated when covering things like war and politics, and especially some of the areas you dip into when it comes to science and health, etc. But what we try to do is be fair, I think, ultimately.
P.S. Just going back to what's going on in Botswana, did I read a headline? Are they shipping elephants or something? Did you see?
No, the president of Botswana is mad at Germany for ending trophy hunting because they make a lot of money in Botswana off of trophy hunting, and they believe they have too many elephants. In fact, they're trying to send some of their elephants to neighboring countries.
Okay.
And what they said was, how about we ship 20,000 live elephants to Germany and see how you like having so many elephants? Now, Botswana does not have the resources nor the logistical might to ship 20,000 live elephants to Germany. I think they were just trying to make a point.
Got it. Okay. See, I guess the headlines, and we'll talk about headlines and how we get clicks and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because even just today, I did a post on confirmation bias. And even the way that we're searching for information, the phrasing that we use when we go to Google or whatever search engine we're using, you know, does X, Y, and Z cause cancer? Is it just the words we use, it feeds into the algorithm and it's going to impact what gets spit back out at us. So, and I want to pick your brain, how, when you prepare for your segments and the information you put out, are you looking actively at different sources of information and sort of, is that what you do?
I think there's a variety of tactics that I've learned over time. I mean, especially when it comes to politics, but frankly, all major news stories these days, is I like to get a sense of how various media outlets with their own biases and own perspectives are covering something. Mm-hmm. So something happens in the news, and sometimes I'll do this on the Instagram account, where you could read the same study or the same event could happen, and how the Wall Street Journal headlines it versus how the New York Times headlines it versus how Fox News headlines it is completely different. And you're like, wait a second, this is the same event.
Right.
This is the same speech that was given. But bias lies in a variety of factors. What are you emphasizing? What are you leaving out? What are you headlining? What quote are you using? Because you could have been at this, two people could have been at the same event and you read it in two different publications and you're like, were we even at the same place?
Mm-hmm.
So I think one thing we try to do is look at multiple news sources, look at multiple media sources. Beyond that, beyond traditional media, are there other folks like me on social media that are covering these stories? That again, you start to get a sense of what their bias is and what perspective they bring. But by going through multiple sources, as we say on the podcast, on our podcast, we like to say, we read the news, we read between the lines so you don't have to. And so some of that is just like, I'm going to read the AP version, the Washington Post version, the CNN version, folks who were there on social media, maybe some far right sources, maybe some far left sources. And through that, can I get a sense of what actually happened? But it requires a lot of homework. It requires a lot of work. And that's time that many of us don't have, right?
Yeah. And I also, it really takes quite a bit of skill. And I really admire how you do it. And I feel like we're kind of trying to do the same, where I'm trying to do what you're doing. You know, you're doing it more, I think, more generally, you know, news in general. I'm obviously more focused on health and science topics.
Right.
But boy, is it difficult to do that. Do you find, are there certain topics that are just, I mean, a headache for you to try to tackle in a way that you think?
Where would you like me to start? Like, I think it's very funny because I used to say, I was like, okay, I think, you know, like Donald Trump is like someone who's challenging to cover, right? Mm-hmm. Because everyone has an opinion there. And I think that a lot of people's bias one way or another affects how they cover things that he says. Mm-hmm. So I would say, anything Trump and generally politics these days is one. Two, the Israel-Gaza war brings up incredibly emotional reactions. You know, sometimes I'll see comments and messages and I'm like, you didn't even read the whole thing I posted. And it was like six sentences. But then they're like, well, you made that in the third sentence. You didn't put it in the first sentence. You didn't put it in the headline. You put it here. And so the Middle East, in particular, Israel-Palestinian conflict, is up there. I would say most recently, Kate Middleton and the royal family.
Really? Like,
up there. Yeah, people, again, it's one of those things that like a lot of people have opinions. Now, some people don't care at all, right? But they'll tell you like, why are you even covering this? This doesn't matter. But then the people who despise the royal family and the concept, and the people who love the royal family, and then they linger on like, you referred to her as Kate Middleton. She's officially Princess Catherine. Like, or like a second reference on Pope. Actually, it was different, but like Pope Francis. They're like, you can't just call him Francis. He's always Pope Francis.
Oh, got it.
So, you know, I think people get hung up based on their expertise. But like, I would say royal family, Israel-Palestinian conflict, anything politics and specific to Trump. But also these days, you know, as you learned and as I started my account during COVID, all things COVID, personal health, medications, a holistic treatment. You live and breathe this stuff. And this is something that, again, people are very passionate about it. And in many cases, it's only black and white. And I like to remind folks, it's a world of grays, my friends.
Oh, I have that quote. It's I have a post. And I say that all the time about science as well. And I think people's expectations of science is that we do things and we're going to have these definitive answers. And yes. I always say, you know, people like that. It's
they want absolutes. They want absolutes.
Want an absolute. But the reality of science is that it's all gray and we're going to learn new things. I mean, look at COVID, even over the last 4 years. I mean, things have changed. Policies have shifted based on new information, the evolution of knowledge, right? And so
it's covering science. What, like one way you cover science every day is the weather forecast, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people should think about science and things related to health and science the same way they listen to the weather forecast. It might rain. It also might not rain. Like, and we have, like, and certainly people are like, oh, the weatherman got it wrong today. The gap got it wrong. But at the same time, you have the expectation that, like, there's a 65% chance of this happening. By the way, the same thing with political polls, right? People are still upset about 2016. Like, oh, I thought, you know, they got it all wrong. No. The polls showed that their indication showed that Hillary had an advantage with a few days to go. And then the final polls weren't able to really take in the surge that Trump had. At the end of the day, polls are not predicted. Like, they give you a direction of where things are going, but they're not 100%. There's a margin of error in them.
And that's
an issue.
It is. I mean, even just yesterday, I'm thinking, I did a post on birth control and, you know, it's highly unlikely that you're going to experience suicidal ideation while on birth control, right? But it is still a possibility. So based on population data, that risk is low. But then you as an individual, of course, if it happens to you, you know, it 100% happened to you, right? And so it's just, this is our best guess, but it doesn't mean it's an absolute. So yes, it's totally a way of thinking.
It's like every medical commercial, pharma commercial I hear on television or the radio where they at the end they're like, and by the way, it could also do the following things. It can cause this, cause this. And you're like, what's that the warning for? And they're like, Tylenol, right?
Yep, exactly. But you know what? Everything could potentially have that same, you know, can cause, even the water we drink, the air we breathe, and the supplement. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but like supplements, which are not regulated and don't, you know, they're not held to that same standard. Whereas pharma, every possible adverse event has to be listed. But so we got connected. I've been following you forever, like I said, but the EWG, how they released the Dirty Dozen list.
Right.
And you made the mistake of sharing, I'm joking now, but like sharing about
How could you share what the EWG was saying? By the
way,
I also shared your post about it.
Yes. And I know you got quite a bit of feedback, I'm sure. Some very
By the way, you have rabid fans out there, I will tell you, Jess. I probably will say, and I don't use rabid in a negative context. I mean, like, just they love you. I posted the EWG Dirty Dozen, right? And then within 24 hours, I probably had at least 100 different people send me your post about them.
Yes. So welcome. Yes. Well, I mean, I don't need to say welcome to you. I can only imagine what your DMs look like. But every time I post about anything related to organic or pesticides or anything like that, my DMs are flooded. And just for, you know, we're not going to get into the weeds about that subject now. Of course, I, you know, did a post on it and sort of trying to explain. And I just want to give my little disclaimer here, you know, that the Dirty Dozen, it's they're commenting on the mere presence of pesticides. But just the presence of something does not automatically translate to harm, right? And so anyway, that's a conversation for another day.
But I guess, you know, one of my takeaways from that is that, like, again, we don't live in a world of absolutes, right? And my point is, like, you know, people are like, the EWG is like the worst thing, blah, blah, blah. And then some people are like, the CDC claims. And I'm like, listen, we also live in a world of imperfect. And we learn that, especially during COVID, right? You know, something that I took away from my experience of covering COVID is that, like, guess what? Like, we're learning later that the CDC actually didn't know what they were talking about in certain things. Mm-hmm. They were making their best guesses in some cases, and they had to revert themselves. So when people are like, well, you know, this is safe and we know, like, well, over time, standards change.
Exactly.
And over time, sometimes you do see that third-party groups, even if they're wrong sometimes, also happen to be right sometimes.
100%.
And we're learning more about the impact of various chemicals in our society on the body. We're only as informed as the latest study, legit study,
exactly,
right? Done in a good way. And guess what? There are a lot of industries that make billions of dollars who have incentives to push certain things on the government, on entities, whether it's the companies that make the pesticides, mm-hmm. whether it's the companies that sell the food, whether it's the companies involved in organic. So there's a lot of interest groups here. And having spent a decade in Washington, I witnessed it on Capitol Hill. When you'd see a piece of legislation die or rise, and you're like, wait, what happened there? And
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It took certain lobbyists from a certain industry, sometimes an industry that completely, you feel like, wait, how are these connected? And then you find out.
Do you ever watch the show Veep?
I thought Veep with Julie Louis-Dreyfus, mm-hmm. when people ask me, what is the most accurate depiction of Washington? And I'm like, you hope it's West Wing. You think it's House of Cards or Scandal, but it's actually Veep.
That is what I thought. This is so validating. You have no idea. Like, this is how things actually happen. But I have to just say, my unbiased scientists who are listening right now, they're going to be, I don't know, upset with me if I don't point out.
They're going to be mad at me or mad at you?
Mad at me if I just don't point out that, of course, organic pesticides, like organic produce is still sprayed with pesticides. Organic pesticides are not necessarily safer for us or for the environment. Just realize that there's everything, there's a trade-off, right? So if we're not using conventional pesticides, then one of two things is going to happen. Either our produce is going to die and it's going to interrupt our food supply and our farmers, or what are they going to do? There's going to be no food to grow. Or two, we have to use an alternative, which is organic pesticides. And those have their own set of risks. So I guess the point is that everything comes with risks. And my frustration with the EWG's Dirty Dozen is that it creates a lot of fear, and it's really not evidence-based fear. Like, if you actually look at the research they're citing research from preclinical studies done in rats or petri dish studies. And we don't have a whole lot of robust human evidence that shows harms of pesticides in the quantities that we're exposed to. Anyway, that's a whole other topic.
We do understand that the chemicals that are being put in our food, mm-hmm. In our soils, et cetera, are, like, there have been studies that show that they can have an impact.
Of course, absolutely. Okay. Yes. And honestly, on both sides of the spectrum, if you're hearing those extremes that are ignoring, like, yeah, there are effects. That's biased. Yeah. And that's inaccurate. And then there's the other issue, something that I'm very interested on, just to one more thing on this topic, is this cumulative effect. We are consuming a lot of different things, and are they bioaccumulating, or what is this additive or multiplicative effect of the different things we're exposed to? And I honestly think at some point we have to acknowledge, like, sometimes we just don't have the data, or we don't have the evidence, And again,
we're only as good as the study that was conducted. And sometimes the headlines are overwritten, right? Many times they're overwritten. In many cases, the vast majority of journalists have zero scientific background, have zero background on how to read studies, have, one thing I appreciated, this is another, area that the vast majority of reporters don't understand, is how the law works and how to interpret Supreme Court cases. So, we were very lucky when I was at CBS to have, longtime Supreme Court reporters who were there for decades who could, pull out the 200-page ruling that just came out of the court. It usually happens between, 10 and 11 a.m. between Tuesday and Thursday. And they can immediately go through and explain what's going on. Then they have to simplify that for people. But there's a lot of people who, will misread it, misinterpret it, and that, becomes the public understanding. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the law or whether it's science, again, this is where you depend on expert journalists, of which sometimes there's only a few, to actually explain the meaning of stuff or tell you, hey, by the way, that study was only done on 27 mice over this period of time. And it showed that they actually gave each mouse 16 Cokes or Diet Cokes. And then you interpret the study about how Diet Coke is dangerous. And you're like, It was done on mice and they gave them 16 a day. Oh, of course.
Exactly. I'm so glad you brought up aspartame, because that is definitely something that many of us in the, you know, science and health world were super frustrated about, because diet sodas can be a great alternative for people, you know, yeah. But there's so much. So look, this is what I wanted to ask you. And I'm so glad you said it, because I'll admit, you know, part of why I even launched this page was my frustration with media outlets and the way that they were covering COVID. It was very, well, first of all, I mean, sort of a unique situation, because it was like no one knew what was going on and, you know, things.
Wait, when did you launch? What month did you launch in?
It formally September 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, or August 2020.
I started posting on my Instagram account in February of 2020 because I was frustrated already very early on, before even the lockdown happened.
With
what was going on in the media.
So I was posting to my personal page and I realized like people really like, they like this, they need this, there's an appetite for this, there's a, you know, whatever, all that's a demand for it. And that formally formalized Unbiased. But anyway, so I guess it's sort of a two-way conversation I want to have with you. I've had this fantasy of creating some sort of a media literacy toolkit when it comes to reporting on science and health. But anytime I share this with folks, they're like, what's that going to do? You know, at the end of the day, just being realistic, you want to get people to visit your page. You want to capture attention. And, you know, it is largely clickbait. You're trying to draw people in. And if you're sort of contextualizing things and adding in those details that, you know, are important, but they make it less sexy, less, like, how do we balance that? What do you think there's a need for this? Or I don't know.
All right. So you're asking, do you have multiple items there?
There's
so I'll pick those one by one. Number one, does there need to be a toolkit for the media on how to cover science? 1,000,000%. By the way, there's no such thing as 1,000,000%, so that would be part of your guide. But I'm just trying to emphasize, this stuff is necessary. Like, how to read through a scientific study that comes out from JAMA or whomever else is like, here are more reliable publications. Because the problem is that you put journal in front of anything, and you're like, the Journal of the American whatever, and you're like, I've never heard of them, but like, that sounds reputable to me.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, I think that, you know, some journals are better at PR than other journals. Some journals are better at overwriting their study results than other journals. So I think that, you know, ultimately a guidebook for, you know, national journalists on how to cover this stuff, who to trust less. You know, I think everything's on a spectrum. You know, I think that would be incredibly useful. And it's something that even at the level I was at, you know, running the CBS Evening News for, you know, broadcast to all Americans every night, 7 million people, you know, ultimately I had a medical team, and like the medical team includes like, you know, Dr. John LaPook, at the time, Dr. Tara Narula, who's another network now, you know, one's a cardiologist, one's an internist, you know, they spent years in science interpreting stuff, but even they only know what their specialties are, and they have to talk to like a dermatologist, for instance, about something related to the skin, or, you know, various specialists, but they'll go ahead and do that. And because they understand science, it's something that, you know, I depended on. But, you know, if they weren't around, ultimately writing up quick science things fell on people who had no background in science, right? They're in journalism because they're good communicators, or they're good writers, or they're very compelling on television. You know, there's a variety of factors as to why people are in, and very low on the list is like their understanding of how to read a study. So that's one. Getting to your other issue of clickbait, you know, the challenge I think, Jess, you face, I face, is that if you're actually trying to be fair and contextual, guess what? That doesn't help you in the algorithm, right? The provocative stuff leads, and that's why like people who are much less steeped in this stuff probably have many more followers, followings than us, and are probably making a lot of money off of social media,
right?
Because facts matter less to them than clicks. And so, you know, listen, I wish that we could get Mark Zuckerberg to change the algorithm, but ultimately the algorithm is about, you know, rewards the people with the most comments and the most likes and the most engagement. And you tend to have the most engagement when you tend to, you know, fall on the extremes.
Right. And appeal to emotion, right? You know, like you can really suck people in and elicit a strong response. Well, I find this really interesting. So my background's in public health data scientist. I never took a course on communication or marketing or media or anything. And there are many folks like me who are scientists who sort of transformed into science communicators during the pandemic. Yeah. But now we've stuck around even after things have calmed down a bit on the COVID front. And we're trying to find our way. And it's like, we don't have this formal training. Are there, and obviously I don't want to put you on the spot, but are there things that we could be doing better? I mean, how do we keep people's attention and keep this momentum going? Any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're all, you know, it happens as these headlines come out, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to be, you have to remain relevant to people based on like what they're most concerned about and what's happening in the news, and you find your angles of approach. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm trying to think, even recently, you know, the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that mm-hmm. happened last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you suddenly have the EPA coming in a week. They're like, everything's cool. Like, don't worry, we did soil samples. And the problem is, when it comes to science communication, which is a main role for the EPA, is when they speak in absolutes like this, especially coming out of COVID, especially coming at a time where already people are less trusting of the government, of Congress, of the CIA, the FBI, the CDC, the FDA, the Supreme Court, all major media, that when you speak in absolutes, you know, ultimately, like suddenly something at some point will come out that says, well, you know, there was some danger here. So I think the lack of couching, the lack of grays, the lack of like, this is the best of what we know right now. Mm-hmm. With this level of reliability, we can say X. Mm-hmm. It's something that happens in a number of sectors. You know, I was talking, we had last year, the former CIA director, Mike Morrell, on my podcast. And he was talking about how he would present scenarios to the president in the Situation Room saying, we think with 30% certainty that bin Laden is in this location, right? Well, that also means it's 70% certainty that he's not in that location. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he happened to be in the room when they got bin Laden, and he thought with a less than 50% that bin Laden was actually in Abbottabad. He turned out to be wrong. He was there. But as they went around the table, that's what they were, you know, that's what one of the voices Obama had in the room as he had to make the decision, are we going to do this raid to get bin Laden in May of 2011?
Wow.
So I think, you know, using it as an example, again, in all sectors, is what is our sense of what's going on? I think a big area here when we talk about science education is climate change. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of like doom and gloom headlines, and there's not a lot of couching that happens. Mm-hmm. And many cases, the media, because it reinforces certain viewpoints, will take the worst case scenario from a report. You know, many of these reports say, here are five levels of what could happen to Earth. But the media is like, oh, let's go with the worst scenario because like, holy crap, like we're all going to die, mm-hmm. right? But what is that? That's a scenario where like we increase the amount of gas and coal by X amount mm-hmm. and there's no cuts, where you've actually seen cuts over the past 20 years, right? There have been effective cuts. Now, again, are we doing as much as we can, as fast as we can? Probably not. That's clear. But the point being, present to people, like, you don't need to present tomorrow. And I see the point of like scaring the hell out of people to try to prove a point mm-hmm. and change stuff. But the problem is that people get savvy to that stuff and then they'll deny it, right? Because, 100%. Hey, you were wrong about this stuff. And so I think, you know, you mentioned it at the top of the pod, but like not speaking in absolutes and saying like, this is what you need to know. Like this could happen, but this could also not happen.
Right.
And I think if reports and journal articles are written in a way that shapes that and presents that, I think that could go a long way mm-hmm. to, you know, restoring some trust.
You're so right. I feel like it turns into a gotcha moment, or it's like you were wrong about this, and then your trust has been totally eroded. You know, people.
Well, but you see it in the media too. Like people are like, I don't read that newspaper anymore. I was like, which newspaper? The New York Times. I'm like, or the Washington Post. I go, why? They're like, well, what about this story they write?
Right.
I'm like, well, they write thousands of stories a day.
Right.
Like, and in the same way that like, do you not bring a plumber to your home because one plumber messed up something one time?
Right.
Like, have you cut off the entire industry?
Yeah.
Like, and the problem is that people want to oversimplify things, and when something is wrong, they declare the whole thing kaput.
Right.
And you know, it's an impossible standard to meet in any industry, including in yours and in mine.
Yeah. I mean, I even think about, and you, I think you were alluding to this, like early in the pandemic when the CDC came out, we were talking about masks. And remember, right. At first, they were like, don't get masks. You know, you don't need to wear masks. There's no evidence you need to wear masks. And then obviously, as we all know, that changed significantly. I mean, of course, there were other factors that I don't think the public was aware of. We were very concerned about PPE shortages. We needed to make sure that, you know, frontline.
Right. But that lack of transparency is a problem.
Yes.
Like the fact that they because they're like, well, you know, now how do I trust their science? And then, by the way, studies have come out and it's like the type of mask that you have. And then you find out that the 6 foot thing was arbitrary. The 6 foot distance was like an arbitrary standard they just came up with.
But and you know what? It's like, to your point, it's a combination of science, but also practical, you know, practicality, other factors that are impacting yeah. things. Like there are so many things that go into, and that's why I don't envy the CDC or any of these, you know, agencies that no. have to make recommendations, because it's not, you know, and people will say, but it's a public health agency. It has to be 100% based in the science. Yes, but we also have to factor in human behaviors, you know, and, sure. And money. And there are other factors. And I'm someone who I think we have to do a better job of, you know, people need to be aware that there are, everything is multifactorial, right? You know, and we were not going to.
And guess yeah. what? No one is perfect. No agency is perfect. Correct. They're all going to make mistakes. And you hope that they're right more times than they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
And that appears to be the case, but they're also going to be wrong 100%. And they're going to admit they're wrong. Right? And so ultimately I think, you know, and people will come away from the entire experience being like, I can't trust anything they say ever again. It's always going to be the opposite, which is not true. Right? These people are in it for good reasons, but ultimately are impacted by the amount of resources they have, the technical expertise that they have,
right.
the timing that they have. And frankly, politics impacts things. And so, you know, you have a lot of factors in there that mean that ultimately you're going to sometimes see headlines that a year or two later, you're like, they got that wrong.
Right. 100%.
But it doesn't mean that the whole agency is bunk mm-hmm. that needs to be, you know, but some politicians will interpret that accordingly.
Also, I just need a moment. I just have to pinch myself. I'm just realizing I'm on this call with you right now, and you were just casually talking about being in the same room as the head of the CIA and Bin Laden. Not in the same room as Bin Laden, but like in the middle yeah. of that. Like just the work you're doing is just incredible. I want to thank you.
Well, no, I should note, yeah. I was not in the Situation Room with Bin Laden.
Oh, no,
the
CIA yes. director was,
no, with the CIA director and Obama. Like I'm just having this, he was telling me about that experience.
Okay, got yes. it. Even still, Moshe.
I wish I was in the Situation Room. I was not in the
Yes, sorry. Yeah. I messed that up. I just wanted just even the fact that this is something we're talking about right now is just blowing yeah. my mind. And I think the work you've done is incredible. You're doing something new. I just want to talk about briefly, and I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but I saw just yesterday you made an announcement. Is there something going on with kids? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, as we talk about media literacy, Jess, one population that needs it. Well, first of all, we all need it.
Yeah.
Our parents need it. Our generation needs it. Gen Z needs it. But you know who also needs it is the Alpha generation. And so one thing we keep hearing more and more is from parents who are like, how do I explain Ukraine to my 9-year-old? How do I explain inflation to my children? How do I explain what's going on in the Middle East to my kids? How do I, like, all of these complex matters, because at the end of the day, kids have legitimate questions and they have access these days to smartphones and information. And even if you try to block it out, they will hear about it at school. And likely they'll hear about it from another kid at school in a very inaccurate way based on what their parents told them, mm-hmm. right? And so I've been very fortunate to be part of the development of a program called First Stop News, which is launching this April, where we'll start on a weekly basis and then hope to ratchet it up, bringing kids the news geared towards 7 to 12-year-olds.
That's awesome.
Because, you know, ultimately kind of 13, 14-year-olds have decided like they can handle the adult news. But it's really hitting that demographic of like first graders through fifth graders, trying to explain these complex subjects, because we've also seen that a lot of kids' news is always like, you know, like here's penguins mm-hmm. at the zoo and like, you know, meet mm-hmm. this astronaut, which is fine, but they have real questions about what's happening in their world and how do you explain these things. So that's a project that I've been working on for the last year, and that has just started. And so literally we're posting the first video to YouTube as we speak here. And so our hope is that we can help with media literacy and also help, you know, this generation, which is digital native, smartphone native, TikTok native, Like, you and I are old enough to remember a time before this stuff existed. These kids don't know any different. So, like, you need to explain that not all YouTube videos and creators are made equal. Not all these people should be taken as seriously. And so media literacy, again, is necessary for adults, but we're focused with this latest initiative, First Stop News,
For kids. That is amazing. Seriously, I have two kids. My daughter's actually turning 6 in 3 days, and my son turns 8 later this year. So I think exactly sort of at the beginning of that age range.
Well, I look forward to their feedback. You tell me what they think and whether. I think right now we're starting with like 7 to 8 minute episodes, like once a week, and then we hope to take it up.
And so where can people watch this?
First Stop News.
Is it on Instagram? It's on YouTube.
The episode will be on YouTube.
Okay.
It'll be on YouTube.
Okay. So awesome.
YouTube.com/@First Stop News.
Awesome. And I want to call out, I was recently introduced to this, to these two amazing mothers who wrote a book. I believe it's called, I hope I'm not butchering this, What is Epilepsy? And I'll tag it in our show notes and everything. But it's sort of exactly what you're talking about, that sometimes the way that we communicate to kids, like, we're painting in broad strokes. Like, sometimes they could handle more than we give to them, and there's a way to approach it. And so this book is about, rare illnesses and how it's not always a happy ending. Is there another earthquake? Sorry, I see your face right now.
No, as we record this, by the way, we're a couple hours since the New York City earthquake. No, you were mentioning a book, and I was trying to find a book that I recently read that also talked about, and I can't find it at this moment. I was looking at my bookshelf.
Okay.
related to communicating to children.
Yeah, anyway, things in health in particular, it's not always rainbows and butterflies, and sometimes there are bad outcomes. And I remember when my dad died, trying to figure out how to communicate that to my kids that their grandpa died, and they're a really complex topic. So I think what you're doing is a long way of saying bravo, Moshe. Can you just tell us where we can follow along all the amazing work you're doing?
Sure. So very simply, I have a website, mo.news, where you can find it all. It's funny you mentioned you started on your personal Instagram account. I also started posting news on my personal Instagram account 4 years ago. And so it still is the handle at Moshe, just my first name, Mosheh. So at Mosheh on Instagram is sort of your 24/7 news feed. And then we have a daily podcast, the Mo News Podcast, Monday through Friday, where we break down about a dozen news stories, including sometimes in health, including sometimes related to EWG reports. So we have that. We also have Mo News, the interview. So we'll put up a weekly interview, sometimes twice a week, on that podcast. And then we have a daily newsletter, the Mo Newsletter. Try to keep it simple here. And you can find that over at mo.news/newsletter. And that's out every morning at 5 a.m. with a breakdown of a variety of topics.
So you're not busy at all. Do you sleep? I mean,
I do. And we have a 6-month-old at home. But thankfully, she's our first, and she's a great sleeper. And I'm told not to expect that of all the children. But Olivia is really helping me get at least a few hours of sleep a night.
Olivia, that's so funny. And it's so true. My son, Dylan, he tricked us. And then we had Sophia, and it was like, gotcha. So.
Got it. All right. Well, if Olivia listens to this one day, thank you, sweetie, for just naturally at 11 weeks deciding you're going to start sleeping through the night. We appreciate you.
Moshe, thank you so, so much for all the work that you're doing and for joining me today. Thank you all, listeners, for tuning in. Sincerely, hope that you appreciated and enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Of course, please be sure to follow along on social media at Unbiased SciPod, where I post daily infographics and continue to share lots of information about health, science, and lots of exciting things. It would also be super helpful if you might consider leaving a review for Unbiased Science on Apple or wherever you consume your podcasts.
The reviews are important. They help us in the rankings, everybody.
Yes, the algorithm. It feeds the algorithm. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please just be sure to hit that subscribe button. That also helps quite a bit. There is also a Substack newsletter. It's free to subscribe, but if you're willing and able, paid subscriptions are much appreciated. You can subscribe at theunbiasedscipod.substack.com. Sincere thanks for tuning in and following along as we share no nonsense, just science.